Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, men make up about 50% of the population. So it stands to reason that they make up about 50% of relationships. But here's the question. Are they considered equally in relationships, or does their perspective somehow get lost? It's commonly accepted that women are the caretakers of relationships, but interestingly enough, women also initiate most of the divorces. And most relationship advice seems to be aimed at women, and this female focus is also quite prevalent in popular culture, in television, movies, whatever. And in reality, in a lot of this popular culture, men are shown to be either relatively incompetent or they're commitment phobes. But the question is this really true? And to get the man's perspective, I'm joined today by Alan Bishop. He's a consultant, writer, television producer, and adventurer. And through his website, the360effect.com, he works with individuals and corporations to help them uncover their better. And he recently wrote an article called Five Risks Every Man Should Take to Build Stronger Relationships. So I read this and thought, I need to get Alan on the show. So Alan, thanks so much for being with me today.
Oh, my pleasure, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
You know, the thing I like about this article is it really is an open invitation, I think, both to men and women about how men can, I don't want to say do better in relationships because that implies they don't do well, but on some level, I think many people don't do well in relationships, male or female. So you kind of broke it down and you talk about their ability to take risks. And I love this quote you have in there. We don't develop courage by being happy every day. We develop it by surviving difficult times and challenging adversity. And that's Barbara DeAngelis who said that. And I don't necessarily like to think of marriage or relationships as difficult times and challenging adversity, but sometimes I think maybe it is.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the other thing that was really key to me when I think about this article, my background is risk and challenge. You know, that's how I've lived my life for the past, you know, probably at least the past 30 years. That's been a really big part of my life, is exposing myself to that, but also exposing clients or in the sport that I did. And, you know, a risk is really something where you expose yourself or you invite yourself to be open to danger. And, you know, danger is there's a level of danger, there's a level of comfort, there's levels of risk, but it really is this invitation where you're opening yourself up to the possibility of danger. And anytime you do that, no matter how big or how small, there's a real opportunity for growth. And if relationships want to continue to stay strong, I believe that they have to constantly be growing.
Well, and that's true. And that's one of the things that I argue when people say that that you're married to the same person, you know, for years. It's like, well, in actuality, you're not, because hopefully both of you are growing and changing and hopefully together. But I'm not the same person I was when I married my husband. I mean, I've changed and evolved and he's changed and evolved. And so I want to talk about the risks that you talk, you know, that you mentioned in the article. And the first one you talk about is be the man you're meant to be. And why do you think this is so difficult? Or why do you think that this is a risk?
I believe it's a risk because we're under so much pressure. And from a man's perspective, you know, we are the type of beast that we like to solve every problem, and when we can't solve something, we go into our cave and we figure it out ourselves. There's not a lot of times where men like to ask for help, and sometimes those risks are doing what's right for you without anybody else having influence over you. And that's really being the man that you're meant to be and walking that path that you're truly meant to walk. I think that people will try to change you because that's in their nature, to try to make you do what they want you to do. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it takes some real fortitude and discipline to understand where you need to go and be the man that you're meant to be.
So what challenges, if any, do you think that women bring to this endeavor for a man to be the man he's meant to be?
What challenges do women possess or
well,
offer men? Well, they're darn, you know, they're frustrating as heck sometimes, and they you want to please them, and it's a choice of which is the greater of the, you know, or which is the lesser of two evils. I think it's funny because men get put into these situations all the time. With my wife, who I love dearly, we're evolving, and I think, you know, I'll talk about that in one of the other points, but I'm constantly battling what I need to do in order to either keep stability in the relationship or fight for my needs rather than hers. But she knows that at some points I'm going to say, no, I'm doing this because this is where I need to go. And, you know, we've had years and decades of learning this process, but, you know, she's one of my biggest stumbling blocks to being the man that I want to be, because I want to please her all the time, or I want to make sure she's happy. I'm a firm believer of a happy wife is a happy life. And that's that eggshells that I have to walk on every once in a while.
Oh, you just made me stomp my feet because I actually really hate that. I really hate that expression. Happy wife, happy life. Oh, it just, I mean, it makes
me. But for a man, it is, I love her dearly. And at the end of the day, if she's happy, I'm happy. And I love that. And I find it very endearing.
But I do think it's really important because you said something that I think gets really overlooked, and that men really do want to please the women in their lives. Now, I think sometimes it can be difficult because they're not exactly sure what it is that's going to make their wife or partner happy. But
I'm really glad you said that.
But I do think that is something that men are really not given credit for. And I think that if women could accept that, and it's really funny because my husband is normally a great gift giver. Not that I care that much about gifts, but he usually is dead on. But he was on a trip somewhere, and I can't remember where it was. But the gift he brought me back was a gargoyle. And I looked at the gargoyle, and I thought, okay, so he looked at that and thought of me. I'm missing the point. And, you know, it's still the joke, but he actually did it because gargoyles are about protecting. So he was like, I'm here, here's this thing because I want to protect you. But it was like total miss. But I knew he was trying to please me. So, I mean, it's now just kind of become a joke. The gargoyle still, you know, sits up on the bookcase and kind of looks at me every day. But, you know, he thought of me. I mean, I could have gotten annoyed and go about it, but he was thinking about me and he bought me this gift.
And I think that's a classic example of the way men and women are constantly evolving. And, you know, he's exactly right in thinking, what can I do that's meaningful? It's meaningful for me. It'll be meaningful for her. All right, this sounds great because even if I'm not there, I'll be there protecting and watching over her, for her. What a great thing for a man to think. And for you, it's like, why the heck is this ugly thing in my house? What was he thinking?
Exactly.
And that sort of leads into the second point of the article is being able to then have a place where you can voice that no matter what that conversation has to be.
Well, and I thought that was very interesting because you talk about it in terms of having hard talks, and you define it as being able to come out from behind any veils. And, you know, I think that's hard for anybody to drop the mask, to open up, but it really is that ability to be vulnerable. I personally personally believe is the key to the type of relationships that everybody says they want to have. These really close, intimate relationships can only happen when we drop the veil. But what makes that particularly difficult for men?
I think it's the risk of, one, not being heard. Two, I think the risk of being vulnerable or appearing to be vulnerable. And then three, I think that sometimes a hard talk can be perceived as being mean or overly strong. And, there's a perception out there that men have to, take care of women. And I don't mean this I'm not trying to be generalized, but it's this protection that men generally are looked at in the relationship. They're the protectors, they're the providers. Not that women can't be protectors and providers, but being very generalized. And when you risk that by having a hard talk and getting angry or voicing a deep concern, I think that's a fear for some men that they're stepping into a place they don't want to ever go in. But I think if you're not willing to have a hard talk, you're just going to bottle it up, and it's going to manifest itself in some other way. And I think one of the keys to these hard talks is when I talk about gaining permission. And I've done this as a consultant, part of the work that I did for most of the late 90s and 2000s. I worked with Fortune 500 companies all over the world, and I worked a lot in leadership and teams. And one of the biggest things that I worked with them on is learning how to gain permission to proceed. And that's just what a hard talk can, that's when a hard talk can be incredibly powerful. But you cannot have them unless you've gained permission. And what I mean by that is, it's very simple to start a relationship with someone, whether it's a business relationship, whether it's with your girlfriend, with your boyfriend, spouse, whatever relationship it is that you're beginning. But to set some playing grounds or setting some boundaries by just saying as simple as, we're not going to go to bed mad. My wife and I have had this one forever, and that a lot of couples do that when they say, we'll never go to bed mad. And then you look back over 20 years of your life together or 10 years of your life together, and you realize you've gone to bed mad a lot of times. Well, by initiating.
I get what the point is about where people say don't go to bed mad. My issue with that is that generally what they do is they're tired, they don't have the controls that you're talking about, and they end up having a fight until 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're still mad.
By starting off by saying, hey, we agree, honey, that we're not going to go to bed mad at each other, and you agree, I agree. We've gained the first level of permission. If you're going to bed 2 days later and one of you has an issue, say I'm feeling unresolved about something, I have permission by saying I'm not going to go. We agreed that we're not going to go to bed mad. I can then say to you, hey, you know what? I'm just burning inside here. I got to get this off my chest because we said we'd never go to bed mad. And by calling attention to that permission that I've gained, just by saying we said we'd never go to bed mad, we agreed on that, that can be where all of the drama happens in that part of the conversation, because all I got to do is come back to that part of the conversation. All I have to do is say, no, but what changed since we agreed two nights ago that we weren't going to go to bed mad?
Well, and like everything else, this is great in theory. And how have you guys learned to put this into practice?
Because you have to do it. It's called a hard talk. But it's true. It's you get better by doing things. You can't talk about stuff, or you can't say you're going to do things, but when it gets to that moment of crisis, that it's a risk, right? It's exposing
Absolutely.
Yourself to danger. If you're not willing to expose yourself to danger once in a while, you're not going to risk anything, and you're not going to grow. And it's great to say that, we'll talk about everything, but you have to do it. And when you start to do it, it becomes easier every single time.
And I talk a lot about how the presentation of it, how it actually starts. So when you're talking about going back to a predetermined agreement, that, like you said, you and your wife have said, we decided we're not going to go to bed mad. So I think, does that in practice, does that kind of allow for the emotional reactivity to lessen to an extent, because it's like, oh yeah, okay, we decided we weren't going to get, you know, we weren't going to go to bed mad. So
100%. All it is a tool, that permission that you've gained. And there's various levels of permission that you can gain all the way along. Like I look at it, here's an example. Bungee jumping or skydiving. You talked to me about skydiving. You know, skydiving is a various levels of permission all the way along. You know, the first level of permission is you've got to go in and physically sign up and sign a waiver form. That's the first thing you do. The first thing you do is pay your tax. You're given your it's a level of permission.
I promise not to sue if anything goes wrong.
And that's another one, right? Another level of permission. Then you go through your ground school, another level of permission. Then you get, before you get into the plane, they say, how are you doing? Are you ready to do this? Yep, you get in the plane. The last thing that you do is the jump master looks you in the eye and says, are you ready to go? And you have to verbally say yes. They're all levels of permission. Now, the ante gets upped every single time, because when you're finally at that door and it opens up and you climb on onto the wing or you jump out, that's the moment of real truth. But every level is another level of risk that you're exposing yourself to. And that's what relationships are. There's many different levels, but if you're continually putting in these levels of permission, that's all you ever have to go back to. And it creates a real grounding within that relationship, whether it's with a spouse, whether it's with a friend, whether it's with colleagues. But it really, if you work it properly and everyone's on that same page, anger there's no reason. You can get angry, but you have a place where you can always come back to, and the anger will not manifest itself. It's a place where you can just kind of come back to and go, look, we agreed. What's happened since then?
And I think that your point of doing this consistently is really what makes it work, because what I hear all the time is somebody's afraid of conflict, so they don't bring up something at a time when maybe they're, you know, a 3 or 4 out of a scale of 10 being upset at that moment, whatever it is, but they go, well, I don't want to bring this up because now we're going to have conflict and I'm afraid of conflict. And so then it sits until it gets to a 9 or a 10 and that person explodes and then everybody's off to the races. But I think that what you're talking about is this ability to kind of have predefined rules. Maybe rules are too strong, but guidelines, like in the Pirates of the Caribbean, we have guidelines, where we go back to go, yeah, this is what we agreed to. But that takes a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for, preparation. And I'm wondering what gets in the way of couples making that preparation before they're in that moment where I'm just infuriated by something you've done.
Oh, I think it's communication, right? Like if you're going to be in a solid relationship, you really have to work at it. There's no ways, we're not perfect, and our relationships with our spouses are never going to be in this 100% stable state. That's life. It's our personalities. It's our cycles. It's our rhythms.
Right.
But by having the ability to set some common guidelines about, you know, it's who you are. It's your values. It's the way that you choose to live and work together.
Exactly. And it's what you want your relationship to look like. This is happily ever after.
If you're not willing to have a talk, right? If you're not willing to have a talk, well, and your level's at a 4 and you suppress it and you don't have a way or a strategy with your partner to get those feelings out, well, the next time that thing shows up, you're going to be at a level 5, and the next it's going to be at a level 6 and a level 7.
Right.
And then, you know,
So it's almost like a preemptive strike. It's like, okay, let's solve this before it turns into something outrageous. And
we don't even, need to solve it, but maybe let's just have an ability to say right. that there's something going on and not have the anger or the charge around it. Like, come back to a place where it doesn't have to be charged.
This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with Alan Bishop, consultant, writer, TV producer, and adventurer, about some of the challenges that men face in relationships. And, you know, to be honest, maybe your relationship is facing some of these same challenges. And if so, I might be able to help. So take a moment and drop me an email or give me a call and sign up for a private consultation to figure out what's going on with your relationship and how to move it forward. Everything would be completely confidential, and you can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie, .com, or you can reach me at 919-924-0463. And so I want to get back to this wonderful conversation with Alan and about the risks that men can take to improve their relationships. And I love the next risk. It's called being foolish. I love it because you say risking to be foolish is admitting we're human, showing our vulnerability and lack of expertise. And I know one of the things that I adore about my husband is he can say he doesn't know something. And he, you know, when he was getting his doctorate and he would be doing all these presentations and stuff, somebody might ask him a question and he would say, you know what, instead of trying to BS around the answer, he would say, I don't know the answer to that. Let me get back to you. And it was like, oh my gosh, he's so evolved. So what
I don't know. I think that for me, being foolish has always been something that I've really respected. And I think in a lot of the experiential work that I did earlier on in my career, just allowing people to get out of that comfort zone with play or with adventure tends to be fairly foolish at times. And when I started doing a lot more work with teams, I really saw this ability to be foolish as a very powerful tool of building relationships. And I think about it as a dad. There's a lot of dads out there and that are those big, all-powerful dads. And sometimes it's the best thing for your children to see that you don't know how to do something or you're not better than them. You're learning just as much as they are. And it's a wonderful moment when you can explore something new with a child and you can, uh-huh. you can do that together. And the same with your spouse, when you can start off on a journey together where, yeah, I'm a klutz and I'm horrible at this, and we can laugh about that.
Yeah, it was really funny because I was just with my husband and my daughter over the weekend, and my husband's learning to play the banjo, and we were talking about physically he can't pick up a rhythm, and both my daughter and I have danced all our lives, and it's kind of like, how can you not do this? But so it's kind of, we always give him a hard time about not being able to, you know, pick up the music. He's like, who's the character in Hitch who can't dance? You know, that's like, that's my husband.
The best one is Steve Martin in The Jerk when he's trying to play the beat and to get into the rhythm. It's one of the best scenes in film. And you know, I've done that in the middle of a dance floor I've pulled out the Steve Martin, and you know, it makes people laugh all the time. But I think there's moments where being foolish can be so cleansing. Mm-hmm. And especially in relationships when you can show that side of vulnerability, or where you can show that different playfulness inside of you, it breaks down a lot of barriers. And I think that as men, again, we tend to drive straight forward a lot of the time, and a tangent's good every once in a while, I believe. And it's really good for those relationships that we care about.
So how can women help men? I mean, and I think we all struggle about what people think of us. I mean, what's the old adage that if we knew how little, you know, we wouldn't care so much about what people thought about us if we realized they actually aren't really thinking about us at all.
Exactly.
But what can women do to help the guys open up, kind of let down their hair, be a little bit foolish, a la Steve Martin or whoever their character might be?
Well, I think for women, it's mirroring, right? Start being foolish yourself. I don't know a relationship expert out there who doesn't say that laughter or humor is one of the top 10 things that you look for in a relationship. So if my wife is being playful, if she's being a bit goofy, if she's making me smile and making me laugh, well, guess what? Guess what I start doing? I start going into that mode, and I'll take some risks to open myself up to a bit of silly. And I've never been afraid to be a little bit silly, but it'll definitely push me into a different edge, right? Like, go to a stand-up comedy night where there's an open mic and challenge each other to take a risk and go up and tell a joke. You know, are you the
one? Oh yeah,
one
now
of
that would just absolutely that would terrify me.
And think about what happens when you get down off that stage. You know, all it is one joke. It's in a room of people who couldn't possibly care less if they ever see you ever again. But it's that you know, it's like I always talk to in some of the coaching that I do, I use a backpack analogy a lot because that's been part of my life. But I look at people carry so much unneeded stuff around on their backs that they think they're going to need. And this view that people actually care about what you're doing is something which people just, they should get rid of it. Take it out. You're never going to need it.
Right.
Be yourself and be foolish. No one will care.
So we just need to add more play and fun and joking into our lives. Now, the last risk you talk about, and I found this, and this was actually the one that really made me say, I got to call this guy, because you talk about stabilizing your environment, and you talk about the three components, that there's you, your wife, and your kids, and that you can't sacrifice any one of them for the other two. And this to me, I mean, I talk about that we all wear, we add hats, we don't necessarily take them off, that we're always us, and then we have our relationship, and then we have our family, and it just happens to be which hat we're is taking priority at the time. But I really, how did you come to this idea about stabilizing your environment?
I think a lot, and I know the hat stuff, there's, I forget the author, but the Six Hat Thinking. I don't know if you've read that book. It's a great
no,
book.
No, I haven't,
that talks
but, that's
about
a, but that's a good thing. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's a great one for teams, but the stabilize your environment. This model originally came to me, years ago. It's by John Adair, and it was a leadership model. And the leadership model was you have individuals, you have tasks, and you have the team. And I worked a lot with my clients in that leadership model. And at the same time, my wife and I were really evolving as a family. When we first met, our oldest son, Casey, was 2 years old. So immediately when my wife and I got together, we were a family. We were mm-hmm. ourselves, we were each other, and
so,
we were
so
this,
you already this, had the extra person. Mm-hmm.
We did. So we had this family, and I mean, it's really exciting now that we're, you know, our kids are out of the house and we're in this place where we don't have any kids. So it's a whole new world.
Kind of nice, isn't it?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, I love my children, and they're welcome anytime in the guest room.
I love it. I love it.
But this whole idea of this stabilize your environment, like I really believe so. It's so core to my being that we are all destined to live a life. And this life is in this body, in this mind, in the spirit, the soul, whatever you choose to see. But we've got to do our best. And if we're committed to these loved ones that are around us, that's why I think there's these three circles. You are that person that can lead this journey. It's only you. And, you know, you've got to do what's right for you. And we talked about that earlier. The family is what that unit is. So it's my wife and my two boys and I. We as ourselves, we're a core unit as well. And then I've got my wife and I. You know, we have a bond between us that is unique. So for me, the stability is, if you think of these three rings, they're all connected, and there's that one spot where the three rings connect. Now, I liken these three rings to a helicopter pad. each one of them is their own helicopter landing pad. And I'm sitting in that helicopter that's in the center, and I'm sort of hovering over that area. You know, it's that one place where those three things, you, family, and wife and spouse are aligned. But at any given time, I've got to go, you know, if I'm finding that I'm suffering, if I'm not feeling good about myself, if I might be a little depressed, if I might be thinking of a career change, if I might need some adventure in my life, if I might need to go into that cave and just be inside my own head for a while, well, I got to pick that helicopter up, hover over into my space. And even though I'm still connected to those other circles, I don't have to worry about them anymore. I don't have to put my mind, my focus there. I need to focus on myself so I can become 100% again. Once I am 100%, I can slide back in and be in that center spot where everything's connected.
And I think that's a really critical thing. And I suppose that's part of why I don't like the happy wife, happy life thing, you know, because my whole thing is you can't sacrifice yourself. And women do this all the time. They always are putting themselves like, you know, 245th. You know? And what I tell people is you are part of whatever decision is being made. And you, it's not that you don't consider other people. You do. But you also have to put your own thoughts and feelings into that dynamic. And I think you describe it really, really well. And there's this tendency, and especially now with our very child-centric society, that, you know, it's all about the kids, but no, it's about me, and it's also about me and my partner. And, you know, it's not an either-or situation. In this particular case, it's all and.
Absolutely. And you know what happens if you're focusing on, you know, look at families that just live for their kids. You've got a husband and wife who have got some wonderful kids. They do everything for their children, and they come home at night and they put their kids to bed. They're exhausted. They don't talk to each other. They go to sleep. And 15 years later, when their kids are off to college, you see divorce. And
absolutely,
it's because they haven't taken the time to go take that helicopter and go into that husband-wife place every once in a while and make sure that they're okay, make sure they're doing what they need to do. You know, kids are, as we all know, kids are very, very resilient. And if they're being loved, it's very easy to get grandma or grandpa or brother or sister or friends to take the kids for the weekend while you go off on that much-needed romantic getaway where all you do is put on clothes to go to the spa and then come home and sit by the fire. I mean, we need
this. You spend time together as a couple, which is actually what, even though our children don't necessarily see that, they want that stability that strong relationship provides. So, Alan,
Absolutely. This has been
a wonderful conversation, and I could be talking to you for like the next 3 hours. But where can people find your information? Where can they get more about this way of creating their mindsets?
Absolutely. My website is the365effect.com. That's my website. Twitter is at the365effect. And, you know, I do write for the Good Men Project on a regular basis. But almost a lot of the stuff after I put it on Good Men Project, I do run it over to the 365 Effect. But what I really try to do is help people uncover their better. And I believe that, you know, everybody out there is going to sell you a widget. I'll try to sell you one too, for sure. But the fact of the matter is you've really got to test and tweak and try and understand what is working better for you in this life and do more of that. And that's what I really try to work with people on when I coach them, when I work with organizations, is helping people uncover what works for them and do more of that.
And I love the idea of uncover their better. And so, you know, relationships are made up of two people. And if the relationship is not working for both of you, then it isn't working. And it's critical to be able to be open to what your a partner is experiencing, even if you think that everything is okay. So if one of you doesn't have, you know, if you don't have the relationship you want, the question you have to ask is, what action are you willing to take to make it better? What are you willing to risk? And when are you really going to take that risk? Because I think that having a great marriage is worth doing whatever it is you have to do to make it better. So keep listening for more ways to make your marriage great. And until next time, stay loving.